Okay, we left off yesterday right in the middle of something. We're on Daf Chaftes Amud Beis. Today's Daf is Daf Lamed. We are up to, I think we're up to the third wide line of Gemara. Tan Rabbanan, hu lilmod ubno lilmod, hu kodem ubno. One has a choice. Either he could pay for himself to learn, or he can afford for himself to learn, or he could afford for his son to learn. He should learn rather than his son. Rabbi Yehuda Omer in Beno Zar is a mulach, but Talmud Meskayim Biyada Beno Kadmon. Rabbi Yehuda says no. If his son is better in learning, his son has more potential in learning, he can become a Talmud Chacham, and more than he can become a Talmud Chacham, then he should have his son learn. Kiyad Rav Yaakov, Bered Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Shad Re'evo Kameda Abaye, like the story where Rav Yaakov, Bered Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, was sent by his father, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, to learn by Abaye. You see, Rav Yaakov obviously was named after his grandfather. So anyway, so he was sent by his father to learn by Abaye. Ki asa chazid lav michadid in shmaite. When Rav Yaakov bereid Rav Acha bar Yaakov came to learn, they saw that he wasn't so sharp in learning, that he wasn't as strong in learning as his father would have been. So Amar Lei, Rav Acha bar Yaakov said, Ana adifa minach, I'm better than you, meaning I could learn better than you. So tuvat deizlana, why don't you go back? I'll go and learn. Meaning apparently you go with whoever is the bigger Talmud Chacham. So it's interesting. Do we ever say that there's a halacha that if I can find someone, let's say I'm a ben yeshiva, and I can find someone who's smarter than me, so I should immediately leave yeshiva and send him instead? Meaning if there's someone in the world who's smarter than me who doesn't have the opportunity to learn, but would be willing to do it, so I give up my spot in yeshiva in order so someone else who I don't have a connection with, but it could be a bigger Talmud Chacham, because it's all about creating the biggest Talmud Chacham. We never say such a thing. Apparently, it's only with a father and son, right? The Gemara says that if it's hu ubno, within the family, since one's chiv of Talmud Torah is primarily on oneself and one son, and not klape everyone else. Yeah, we have a mitzvah to teach everyone else Torah, but my own chiv of learning Torah is for myself and for my son, of teaching my children Torah. So that's the that's where this halacha is limited to, of finding within the family who has the most potential and channeling our resources into exploring that potential. Shama bayit kava asi. So when Rav Acha bar Yaakov now was going to the yeshiva to replace his son, he was going to learn by Abaye. So Abaye heard that he was coming. Havu mazik be'rabana da Abaye. There was a mazik. There was some sort of demon in Abaye's beis medrash. T'chiavu aili betrina afilu biyamama havu mitziki. Even when you would go with two people to the beis medrash, and even in broad daylight, which are normally situations where mazikin go away, where they aren't effective, still this mazik was always out. It was always there to get you. So Amar Luhu lo leisav le'inishu shpiza after the misrach shnisa. So Abaye gave a clap in the base measure when he heard Rav Acha bar Yaakov was coming. He said, nobody offer Rav Acha bar Yaakov hospitality. This way he'll have to stay in the base medrash. The mazik will attack him, and maybe a nace will happen, and he'll be able to be saved from the mazik. And by killing the mazik, maybe he'll be able to destroy the mazik, and none of us will have to worry about this mazik anymore. Al baspa hube rabbanan. So Rav Acha bar Yaakov indeed went, and he slept overnight in that base medrash. Idmile ketanina de shiva rishvase. And the mazik appeared like a snake that had seven heads. Kol kriya de kara nasr chad reshe. Every time he was korea, every time he bowed, one of the heads of the mazik, meaning he was bowing in tefillah, every time he bowed, one of the heads of that mazik fell off. The next day, he thought that it wasn't such a funny joke. He said, you know, if I wouldn't have had a miracle happen to me, that could have been a tremendous sakana. That could have been terrible for me. So the Marsha over here asks, it's a famous Marsha, because he asks the question, you're not allowed to be Ein Somchan al Neis, right? You're not allowed to be Somchan al Neis. How could Abaye put Rav Acha in a situation because Efshar de Misrachish Nisa, maybe a miracle will happen, maybe something will happen. So Marsha says, Ksas Kasha, the Hechdach Abaye also Lamakum Sakana, Ala Safik, the Shami Misrachish Nisa. How could Abaye put him in a Makum Sakana? Because maybe an ace will happen. We got him Misrachish Nisa, Yumanakalim Zuchiyosim. Even if an ace does happen, doesn't that take away some of his Zuchiyos? So Vieshlomar de Vadai Samach Abaye al Chasiduso, Vishamitoch Tfilosolo Yenizot Vyaharoga Samazik. The Ein Zem Mikri Nes. Says the Marsha, an unbelievable Yisod. Abaye was relying on the fact that Rav Acha bar Yaakov knew how to daven, and that when he davened, he would be protected. And when you're protected based on tefillah, that's not called a nace. when tefillah works, it's because tefillah works. That's derech hateva, that tefillah works. Nes is when you're saved without tefillah. So what was Abaye saying then when he said that maybe he'll have a nes? Ela sha'amar d'shema kodem tefillah yisrach hishnisav yinakolom yizchiyosav u'mishum safek zeh ein lumnoa havadeh shiharugosav. Meaning, basically, the Marsha says Abaye's thinking was as follows. There are two possible outcomes from this. One possible outcome is that a miracle will happen before he even begins to daven, that mazik will be destroyed, but it will take away from some of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's zuchiyos because a miracle will occur. The other possible outcome is that he'll daven and b'derech hateva he'll destroy the mazik. Either way, it's not going to be a sakana for Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, and therefore he figured based on the suffix that there's a chance we might be menakalom zuchiyosav because a nes will happen, versus the possibility that it won't even cause a diminishing of his zuchiyos. He figured it's worth taking the chance considering that there's this mazik that's been haunting them the entire time. The krios are also related to the heads of a snake, right? It said this mazik looked like a snake. The kri and the heads of the snake were wiped away based on bowing. So the Marsha connects that to the Gemara in Brachos that someone who's not korea b'modim, person who doesn't bow at modim, so the Gemara says his spine will turn into a snake after he dies. So apparently krios are directly related to or directly counter the koach of a snake. Tanu Rabbanan, Lumotar v'lisa isha, Lumotar v'achakach isa isha. If a person has two choices, either to learn or to get married, so he should learn first and then get married. V'miyav shalo b'lo isha, isa isha v'achakach yomotar. But if he realizes he needs to get married, he can't go on without getting married, so then he should get married and then learn Torah. Amar Avidam Rishmuel, halacha nosa isha v'achakach yomotar. Always best to marry first and then learn Torah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rechai mitzavar of Yasuk Torah. Rabbi Yochanan says, how could that be? If you're gonna get married first, you have responsibilities. So he has the responsibility of supporting a wife. How's he going to be able to focus in his learning? Much better to learn first and then to get married. V'lo pligi halan v'halahu. In fact, it's not a machlokas. It's different for b'nei Bavel and b'nei Chutz La'aretz and b'nei Eretz Yisrael rather. Says Rashi, halan v'halahu b'nei Bavel yuholkin v'garsim mishnayis atanam b'Eretz Yisrael. The b'nei Bavel would go to Eretz Yisrael yeshivas to learn. And we talk shalom l'mchutz l'mekamim ein sarchei abayis mutalim alav. And because they were learning outside of their normal place where they lived, where their wives were, so they weren't responsible for supporting their wives. And therefore they could get married first because it's not going to cause them any problems in terms of distracting them from their learning because they're not going to be living anywhere near their wives. And halahu l'bnei Eretz Yisrael alamdim b'mekomam, but b'nei Eretz Yisrael who stay home when they learn, im nos yishu yitzarcha b'ayis mutalim love v'yivatlu, if he gets married it's going to cause bittul Torah. Tosfos says, come on, that can't be the pshat. Tosfos asks a series of questions. He says, kashal rabbeinu tam, demashma dekam reshmol t'nos yishu t'chila k'dei lios b'li hiru meaning, if the whole point of getting married is to solve the problem of hirhurim, how does it solve the problem if you get married and then you never ever see your wife? If you go to Eretz Yisrael, that's what we're talking about, that the ones who should get married first are the ones who leave home. How does that solve the problem of hirhurim when you're never going to see your wife because you're going to be very far away from home? Va'od kasha. How do we encourage someone to get married and then abandon his family and not support them? Rashi's saying, oh, you're not going to have to worry about supporting your family because you're going to be living so far away. What are they supposed to do? How do we allow someone to get married and then just abandon his family and leave them without any means of support? So says Tosfos al kenir al Rabbeinu Tam ipcha. He says, I think the pshat is just the opposite. When Rabbi Yochanan says Rechaim Savar v'yasuk b'Torah, he's talking to Bnei Bavel that you can't leave your wife and go learn Torah and leave everyone as poor people and not without anything to eat. And Shmuel said, get married first. He's talking to Bnei Eretz Yisrael. He's saying, get married and you can learn in Eretz Yisrael, because this is where you learn anyway. And the Bnei Eretz Yisrael generally had a higher standard. They generally were wealthier than the Bnei Bavel, so they had more opportunity to be able to be married and learn as well. And then Tosfos works out which of these Amoraim lived in Bavel and which lived in Eretz Yisrael, and how it could be that they're talking to the Bnei Bavel versus Bnei Chutzlar versus Bnei Eretz Yisrael based on who they were. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. Mishtabach Rav Chisul Rav Huna Ber Rav Amnuna Dadam Gadol. Rav Chisul is praised Rav Huna Ber Rav Amnuna that he was Nadam Gadol. Amar Leik Shevi Al Chaviyol Yadi. So he said, okay, you say he's such an Adam Gadol, I want to meet him. He asked us, when he came, Chazid de lo parasudra, he saw that he wasn't wearing a turban. Amalei, my time lo parasudra, he said, I don't understand, why aren't you wearing a turban? Amalei, de lo nasivna, he says, well, I'm not married. Adrin la ape mine, so he turned his face away from him. Amalei, Chazid de lo chazas lu la ape adinasavta, so they realized he's not going to look in his face until he gets married, meaning apparently he thought it was, to not wear a turban is one thing, but to not even be married, he thought that was a terrible avla, that he wasn't married. He wouldn't even look at him if he wasn't married. This Gemara is possibly the source for the idea that we don't do an atifa, that we don't do an atifa sarosh with a talis until one gets married. And Mishbura quotes such a minhag that even though people who are not married sometimes do wear a talis, in many communities, because they do wear a talis, or if they're about tefillah, they'll wear a talis, they get an aliyah, they'll wear a talis, but they won't put the talis over their head and do the atifa until they're married, because apparently it was an acceptable excuse to not be wearing the turban. The fact that you're not married, it just wasn't acceptable to not be married. Now, the Mishnah Berurah is not so thrilled with the idea that people who aren't married don't wear a talis, because it's unclear exactly where that comes from. It doesn't say that in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't say that in Gemara anywhere, that when you're not married, you shouldn't wear a talis. You have this source that when you're not married, you don't have an atifa, you don't have an atifa sarosh, but what does mitzvah tzitzis have to do with marriage? L'chor, it has nothing to do with marriage. In Shuvah's Divrei Yatziv, Ar Chaim Simin Yud, Gavri quoted this in the Chabur a few weeks ago, and I thought it was a great Mar Makom. He discusses the Chassidish Minag. Heshi actually pointed out to us the Chassidish Minag that I was unaware of, but apparently it's Chassidish Minag when it comes to Tefillin and Chol HaMoed, that Bachrim don't wear Tefillin and Chol HaMoed. Once they get married, they do wear Tefillin and Chol HaMoed. But there are some Chassidim that have such a Minag. So he says Shabachrim. So he says that the idea is that when a person reaches a certain age, which is Ben Shmon Esrei, which is the age of Chuppah, that's when he also has a certain sense of Yerushimayim, and therefore he's capable of appreciating, of being able to wear the tefillin at all times. And he said the other way, that Bachrim do wear the tefillin when they get older, they don't wear the tefillin. He says because there's a certain assumed maturity that when a person is married, that they have, that they're not going to need the os of tefillin to carry them through on Chol HaMoed. But later on, they'll be able, but when they're still young, they need the os of tefillin to carry them through. And he says, "V'gam de bachur lo masatif t'talis," and that's the same idea why a bachur is not masatif t'talis. Shehu me'orer liyiras Hashem, he's not ready for that level of asorus for yiras Shemayim, because he doesn't have that same maturity. Okay, anyway, says the Gemara of Vayter. Rav Huna del Tamei, Tamar ben Esrim Shana v'lo nasi isha kol yama ba'aveira. Rav Huna is l'shitaso, because he says when someone is 20 years old and he's not yet married, so all of his days are spent doing averus. Ba'averus al kadaitach, really? He's sinning? He's doing averus of arayos just because he's not married? No, eleima kol yama bihir aveira. Nobody has hirhurim problems when he's not married. Amar Rav v'chein tan d'vei Rav Shmuel, adchav shan yeshev v'kosh brachu mutzapel adam masa yisa isha. Up until the age of 20, God waits. When's the person going to get married? Kivin shigia chav v'lo nasa, omar tibi chatz mosav. When he reaches the age of 20 and he's not married, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let his bones rot. Amar Rav Chisda, Haida Adithna Mechavroid and Asivna B'shitza. He says, the reason why I'm so much better than all my Chaverim is because I got married at 16. You have an Asivna Bar Besar, Hava Minil the Satan Giru Beinech. And had I got married at 14, then I really would have stuck it to the Satan. Amar Le Rav Le Rabbi Nassim Bar Ami, Adidach Al Tzavari Debreich, Mishitza V'Adesu Metarti. He says, whenever you still have control over your son, you should exert that control between the age of 16 and 22. Regarding what should you exert that control that you have over your son? So Rashi has two deos over here. Rashi says in the first lashon that adidach atzavrei derech ba'od yad chatekif al benachla kodem shiagdu lo yikabel tochachascha hisio isha, that while you still have some control over him, get him married while he'll still listen to you. And what age is that? Between the age of 16 and 22, because that's the age where it's appropriate to get married. The second lashon Rashi says with the first skinny line, lashon acher adidach atzavrei derech adiyadcha al tzavrei derech Yibarech, Bishah Sha'od Yadcha Takifa Alav, while your hand is still in control over him, Havizar Lelamdo Tochachos, that's when you should really give him Musar. Ve'ezaz Mano Mishitzer Ve'adas Metartin, what is the ideal time to inspire him and to give him Musar and to be on top of him and to push him to accomplish? Between the age of 16 and 22. Basar Mishitzer Ein Badas Lekabel Tochachos Kolkach, prior to that he's still a little too sensitive to be able to really be Mekabel, the Musar you have to give him. And therefore it's not good to come down too hard on him prior to the age of 16. After the age of 22 you have to let go a little bit, meaning you have to let him mature, and you have to worry that if you come down too hard on him after the age of 22, he's going to reject whatever you have to say. So those are the prime ages to inspire a child and to really be on top of him, to push him to accomplish as much as he can. Some say no, it's between the ages of 18 and 24. Kitanai, these ages reflect the machlokas tanan. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Pasuk says, we should be mechanech a child al pi darko. Rashi says, derech shekol yamav yehemis naigbo, chanoch l'nar ruso. Al pi darko means, make sure you have a plan for the future. Don't just be mechanech a child where right now it seems like a great thing and it seems like he's accomplishing so much, if that's going to destroy him for the future. Rav Shach always says that he feels sometimes parents are too hard on their children, that we come down, we have such high expectations of our children that sometimes they respond okay when they're young, but ultimately they reject it, and ultimately they rebel against it because some children never get to experience childhood properly, and we need to make sure that I once asked him about my children playing ball on Shabbos. I wanted to know what age I should stop having them play ball in the backyard on Shabbos. So at that time, it was 2 years ago, so Yonah was 7 years old. So he said, you have to let children be children. He still didn't give me an age. I'm still not sure exactly. He said, you have to let children be children. You can't come down so hard. So anyway, so that's Rashi says, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, make sure that there's a future. Make sure that you be mechanich them in a way that there's a plan, that you're going to chart out what their life is going to be like. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemiah, Chadam Mishitzah V'adesim Metatim, Chadam Timnistrei V'adesim Arba. What's that referring to? That what age is that referring to? So again, that's the 2 days, either between 16 and 22 or between 18 and 24. Obviously, Chanoch l'nar al pi darko, the Gra in Mishlei famously says that it relates to the fact that each child has their own kochos, their own abilities, their own talents. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko means that you have to be mechanech a child based on who he is, not just based on a standard set of expectations and standards that you have for someone. You have to look at who the child is and be mechanech him based on his own kochos and his own talents. To what extent does a person have to teach us on Torah? I'm Rav Yomashmol Gon Zvulun Ben Dan. To the extent that Zvulun Ben Dan was taught Torah. To what extent was he taught Torah? Shalimdo avi aviv mikra mishra talmud alach vagados. His grandfather learnt with him mikra mishnah Talmud halachos and agados. Meisvei lamda mikra in lamda mishnah v'amrav mikra zu Torah. But wait a second, don't we learn that if you taught your son mikra, you don't have to teach him mishnah? And mikra refers to Torah. Sounds like mikra refers to only Torah. It doesn't refer to neviim uksuvim even. That all you have to teach your child is chumash, and after that he's on his own. So apparently you don't have to teach your child all that much. So answers the gemara: kizvulun ben dan v'lo kizvulun ben dan. Kizvulun ben dan shalom do avi aviv v'lo kizvulun ben dan shidilu hasa mikra mishnah talmud halachos and agados v'iluachem mikra levad. Because it's like Zvulun Ben Dan, we have to teach our children to the extent of Zvulun Ben Dan, in the sense that even a grandfather is responsible to teach his grandchild Torah. But we don't have to teach him like Zvulun Ben Dan in terms of how much the grandfather taught him. Meaning a parent only has to teach a child, and a grandfather only has to teach the grandchild Mikra. But beyond that, that's the child's own responsibility to learn. It's not the parent's responsibility to teach the child. But so apparently you do see from here, apparently at least at this stage of the Gemara, the Gemara is about to question this, that there is a responsibility of the grandfather to teach even a grandson the Torah, to teach B'nai Banim Torah. The Gemara seems to refer to it as avi aviv, as the paternal grandfather's responsibility. Meaning, because I guess logically, if one's daughter, if one does not have a chiv to teach a daughter Torah, so the chiv can't extend to the next generation. If the chiv didn't extend to the first generation, but when it comes to a grandson, a paternal grandfather relationship, so then it would there would be a chiv. Because machlokes achronim, when we say in the discussion of being mechabed a grandparent, obviously one has to be mechabed Kavod any zaken, but even aside from that, the extra level of kibud that one has to have for a grandparent, there's a discussion in the Achronim, because there's Gemara in Sota that says that one of the Amoraim said to his maternal grandfather, "Why do I have to be mechabed you? You're not my father." And some of the Achronim suggest that, I think the Aruch HaShulchan quotes the Machlokas, that maybe there's a difference between a paternal grandfather and a maternal grandfather. Maybe there's a chiyuv to be mechabed a paternal grandfather, because we see there's this extra relationship of this Talmud Torah relationship. But a maternal grandfather, you don't have that relationship with the Talmud Torah. Maybe there's not as great of a chiyuv to be mechabed him. Anyway, says Gemara, V'yaviyah v'mi mechayev, are you really chayev to is a grandfather really chayv to teach his grandson Torah? V'atani v'lumadim osamas b'neichem lo b'nei b'neichem. Doesn't the pasuk say v'lumadim osamas b'neichem, and we darshin, yes, your sons, but not b'nei b'neichem, not your grandsons? Umani mekayim v'adatam l'v'necha l'v'nei v'necha. Aye, but what then would we do with the pasuk that says v'adatam l'v'necha l'v'nei v'necha, which includes grandchildren, obviously? Lama l'cha shakam l'amed is b'no Torah, ma'la l'v'a kasuk yulamdu l'v'no l'v'en b'natzav kol daros. No, that tells me just how great it is to teach your son Torah. That when you teach your son Torah, that's ki'ilu that you taught all future generations Torah, because you're continuing the chain in the Masorah that started with Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. So by continuing that chain, it's as if you taught many generations at one time. So basically, question mark, right? Don't you see that grandfather doesn't have to teach his grandson Torah? Say, so answers the Gemara, no. Hu diyamar ki etana detanya. We have another brisa that says as follows: that when it says v'matam osam esbenechem, how do I know that you have to teach grandchildren as well? That's why it says v'datam l'vnechel v'nei v'necha. Tell me, you have to teach grandchildren as well. Imkei matam l'omer b'nechem. Why then does it say only b'nechem if it includes b'nei b'nechem as well? To tell me b'nechem v'lo b'nosechem. It's to be memaid that yes, you teach your sons but not your daughters, which is the drasha the Gemara used yesterday when the Gemara wanted to know how we know that a woman is not chayiv to teach her son Torah. So we traced it back to the fact that her father is not chayiv to teach her. And again, it's from that drasha that b'nechem v'lo b'nosechem. But a grandchild has to teach. I'm told that in some of the Lakewood yeshivas in the cheders, they send the bills to the grandparents, and they include this Gemara on the top of the bill to remind them that it's their chiv as well, not just the parents who are living in Kolel. The grandparents who have some money have to teach their grandchildren Torah. Fine. Amar Reb Shimon Levi, Kolam Laminis Ben Beno Torah Ma'al Lava Kasu Kilu Kibla Me'ar Sinai. Anyone who teaches grandson Torah, his son's son Torah, it's as if he has been mekabel the Torah at Har Sinai. Shnema v'adatam l'nechav v'nei v'nechav v'samachlei yom ha'shamatav v'nechav v'lkachav v'choriv. On the one hand it says teach your grandchildren, then right near that it says the day that you stood at Har Sinai. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Ashkel Rabbi Shubin Levi d'shadi disna reisha v'kamam t'lei l'yinuka l'bei k'nishta. So he found that Rabbi Shubin Levi would quickly throw something on his head and run out to bring the child to the yeshiva to go learn. Amalei Michael Le'ai, so he said, why do you know, put your turban on nicely, okay, you know, put yourself together. Why would you just like throw a baseball cap on and run out of the house to you know, to in a disheveled manner to go teach the kids? What is it, not a big deal that which it says in the pasuk v'odatam l'vnecha, and right next to that it says that it's like standing at Har Sinai? Meaning, is it really important that I make myself look all put together and pretty before I send my kid to learn Torah? Is there anything more important in my life and sending my kid to go learn Torah? It's going to take precedence over everything. From then on, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba would not have breakfast. Apparently, umtzeh is a like barbecued meat. Interesting breakfast. So he wouldn't have. He wouldn't. I don't know what time he would eat the breakfast, but he wouldn't eat the breakfast until he would first teach his son, and mostly he would review with the son yesterday's learning and add a little bit of extra learning for today. Meaning, you see the derech of teaching as well. That with especially with young children, with everyone really, it's about chazara. But with young children especially, it's about just going over and over and over, and then just adding a little bit each day, reviewing and adding, reviewing and adding. Rabba bar Rav Huna lo toy mumsa ademaisi l'nukal lebeis midrash. Rabbi Rav Huna would not eat his breakfast until he brought his child to the Beis Medrash. Amar Rav Sarfim Shur Ben Chanani, Maidichse Vishinantam Levenecha. What does the pasuk mean when it says Vishinantam Levenecha? Al Turk Vishinantam El Vishilashtem. Don't just read it as Vishinantam, but Vishilashtem. What does it mean, Vishilashtem? La Olam Yishalish Adam Shnos, or Shlush Mikra, Shlush Mishra, Shlush B'Talmud. A person should divide his years up into three parts. One third of his years, if a person figures that he'll live about 90 years, so he should spend the first 30 years of his life learning Mikra, the second 30 years of his life learning Mishnah, and the third 30 years of his life learning Talmud. So frek the Gemara, mi yodea kamachai, that's great if someone knows going in exactly how long he's going to live. So I know if I'm going to live 120 years, I'll do 40, 40, 40. If I'll live 90 years, fine, that's wonderful. But if you don't know how long you're going to live, what if you're planning on living 120 years, and then a guy dies at the age of 80, so he never got to Talmud. So what of his plans then? What comes of his Talmud Torah then? So says Mar Lo Tzrich Liyomei. No, it means to divide it up by days. What does it mean by days? Says Rashi Yemei HaShavua, that you take Sunday, Monday, you learn Mikra, Tuesday, Wednesday, you learn Mishnah, Thursday, Friday, you learn Talmud, and Shabbos, I guess, you chazer everything or something. But you divide up the days of the week. Says Tosfos, that Rashi says you divide the days of the week. Tosfos says, he says, Veloni Hira. I don't think that's correct. What if he dies on Wednesday? Then he'll never get to the Talmud of that week. So that's going to be missing. It's going to be very unbalanced in his learning if you do that. So it says, nearly the farish b'chol yom b'yom atzmo yishalish. Now that every single day you have to divide up. When Rashi says liyomei, he might have meant days of the week, but says it's incorrect. You're supposed to divide up each and every day, one third of the day in Mikra, one third of the day in Mishnah, one third of the day in Talmud. You might die at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and miss out of your Talmud that day. Okay, so yeah, in the davar sof. Obviously, there's going to be, there's going to be some imbalance in the learning. But ideally, we should strive for total balance: one third Mikra, one third Mishnah, one third Talmud. That's what it sounds like. So, do we fulfill this at all? So says Tosfos, yeah, we do. Al kein tikin b'seder Rav Amram gan k'mosha anu nogim b'chol yom yom kodem p'suket d'zimra lomer Mikra Mishnah Gemara. That's why before p'suket d'zimra we read p'sukim of Karbanos, we have Mishnah Vezum Mekoman, and we have Gemara Rabbi Shmuel Lomer. Why do we choose those particular passages? Well, the Karbanos we understand in Shalom Parmes Vaseinu it's a chiv, perhaps as if we're bringing the Karbanos each and every day. So the Mishnah, I think the Mishnah Brewer writes that the Mishnah it's the only parak of Mishnah that there's no machlokas, so we know that it's pure Talmud Torah. So it's the ideal Mishnah to learn. And the Gemara is, if you look at the Rambam's definition of the word Talmud, when the Rambam quotes this halacha of the Mishalish of the Mishnosav, the Rambam's definition of the word Talmud is the ability to use the Midos, Shatorn, and Drashus Ben to derive halachos. So what could be a better example of Gemara than the actual Yud Gimel Midos, Shatorn, and Drashus Ben, the actual understanding of the Yud Gimel Midos? So that's why we picked those passages. Rabbeinu Tam Pirushanu Somkana, Rabbeinu Tam says there's another justification for what we do. Shanu Somkana Hadamirim Sanajin Bavel Belula B'mikra Mishnah B'Gemara. The Gemara's Bavel Balul Mikulam. We rely on that which it says that Talmud Bavli is called Bavli, not just because it was written in Bavel, but because, and Bavel got its name partially because it's Balul, it's saturated with Mikra Mishnah and Gemara. Talmud Bavli has everything in it. On this Amud Gemara that we're learning today, there are plenty of psukim that are quoted. So you learn Mishnayos, you learn Gemara and psukim all within Talmud Bavli. So that's how we fulfill our obligation of dividing our time into three parts. The Shach in Yoredeya says, we just discussed this when we had that shiur on Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's Mavol the Sefer Emes LeYaakov. The Shach in Yoredeya says that's why people don't teach kids Navi anymore, because you don't really have to, as long as you teach your kids Talmud Bavli. So it's Bal b'Mikra Mishnah b'Talmud. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky takes very strong issue with that. He does not think that that's correct at all. It's not what Rabbeinu Tam is saying. Rabbeinu Tam is saying once you've learned everything and you're an adult and your only issue is not whether you know Tanakh. You know Tanakh already. Your issue is whether you're going to have a balanced learning schedule for today. So then you can rely on Gemara giving you that balanced learning schedule. But when it comes to actually knowing Tanakh and knowing Mishnayos, you can't skip it. You can't just learn Gemara and expect to know Tanakh. It's not going to happen that way. So that at young ages, you do need to learn all of these things. He does not think that the Shach's justification is correct. The Shach, for his part, says that the Bach wondered about this minhag that people have not to teach their kids Navi, and the Shach says, I think I have a justification. So anyway, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky rejects that justification. Anyway, that's why the Rishonim were referred to as Sofrim. The early generations were called Sofrim because they knew how to count all the letters of the Torah. The Vav of Gachon is halfway through the letters of the Sefer Torah. That's halfway through the words of the Sefer Torah. psukim. And Viskalech is halfway through the psukim of the Sefer Torah. Yechasmen chazer mi ya'er, ayin di ya'er, chetzin shel tehillim. The ayin of the word ya'er in that pasuk is halfway through halfway through the letters of Tehillim. Vurachum yichaper avon, chetzin de psukim. That's halfway through the psukim of Tehillim. Vayir Rav Yosef, vav de gachon mehagisa mehagisa. So when we said the vav de gachon is halfway through, does that mean it's the last letter of the first half of the Torah or the first letter of the second half of the Torah? I don't know why. There must have been a Masorah that the Torah has exactly an even amount of letters, not an odd amount of letters. Otherwise, it might have just been the middle letter, right, the center one. So Amalei Nesi Sefer Torah v'mninu. So he says, okay, let's go bring a Sefer Torah and we'll count it. So Milo Amar Rabba Bar Bachana Lo Zaz Mishar Hashiv Yus Sefer Torah Manam. Don't we know they used to do that? Meaning that used to be the minhag. Rabba Bar Bachana said that they used to go count the letters of the Sefer Torah and they would know exactly what's what. So Amalei, no, they used to be able to do because Inu Bekiva Chaseros V'Yaseros. Anan Lo Beki Inan. They know Chaseros V'Yaseros. They know where every little vav and yud and hey, all the extras and when you spell Aharon with a vav and when you spell it without a vav, all the chaseros v'yaseros they're familiar with. We're not pekin b'chaseros v'yaseros. We're off on the chaseros v'yaseros, and therefore counting won't do us any good because we don't know that our Sifrei Torah are accurate in that sense. We don't know that our Sifrei Torah have all the right chaseros v'yaseros. This Gemara is used as the major argument against the major halachic argument, at least besides for the mathematical arguments, the major halachic argument against the Bible codes. That the Bible, how do the Bible codes work? They tell you that look in the parsha of. I remember we had someone in high school, when I was in high school, someone came and presented a number of the codes to us, so one just stuck out, I guess, in a high school kid's mind. He said, if you look in the parsha of Mishkav Zachar, so you'll count every 49 letters, and the word spells out Aleph Yud Dalet Samach, AIDS. Okay, so that was one of the Bible codes. I'm not making it up. That was one of the Bible codes. So why what's the halachic argument against it? You don't know what every 49th letter really is because we're not pekin b'chaseros v'yaseros. There may be extra vavs, extra yuds, missing vav. We don't know what all the chaseros v'yaseros are. So the whole idea of counting letters and being able to figure out every 50 letters, every 49 letters, we know that we don't have that expertise anymore. Okay, Bayu Rav Yosef is galak mehagis or mehagis. Should I not have said that on tape? All right, Bayu Rav Yosef is galak mehagis or mehagis. So is on this side or on that side. So he says, okay, psukim we know. Maybe we don't know every letter, but psukim we should be able to count. So psukim now we don't know psukim either. That in Eretz Yisrael they used to divide a pasuk that we have as one pasuk, they would divide it into three separate psukim. The pasuk, so we see that we're not even bekiyin in the psukim themselves. Okay, the Rashi says that Tosfos of your quotes that Nikru Sofrim. Why were they called Sofrim? So Rashi, so Tosfos says that he quotes Rashi that Umishpachas Sofrim Yoshua Yavzi Yerushalmi. Then he quotes Yerushalmi that Shaasu Kol HaTorah Kula Misparos, that they were called Sofrim because they made numbers out of everything in the Torah. What does it mean they made numbers out of everything in the Torah? Avos Malachos Arbam Chasarachas. There are 39 Avos Malachos. There are 4 Avos Nezikin. Things like that. Whenever you can attach a number to something, we try to do that. That's a very good tool in learning in general. Even when just learning through a Gemara. So instead of just reading a question and seeing there's this answer, there's that answer, that there's that answer. So that's what we always try to do. We always try to say the Gemara is going to present 4 answers, 5 answers. Answer number 1, answer number 2. Giving it numbers gives it a certain clarity that you wouldn't have otherwise. So it's always a good idea of learning. There are 5,888 psukim in the Sefer Torah. Yesrael of Tehillim Shmona. Tehillim is 8 more psukim. Chasim and Divrei Yom Shmona. Divrei Yom has 8 less psukim. If you look in the margin, I don't know, in some of the newer Gemaras, they may have moved it from the margin to somewhere else. But if you look in the old Gemaras, in the margin, it says, Kfi Cheshvan Nimsa B'kala Chumashin, according to our Chumashim, Ola Psukim Ator Chamesha Salafim Tuf Mem Hey. It actually works out to 5,845, not 5,888. So there's something off, right? We're obviously not Pekim in the Pesukim exactly. Tan Rabbanan, Vishinantim Shu Divrei Torah Mechudadim Beficha. Vishinantim teaches us that you're supposed to be fluent in Divrei Torah. Shem Yishal Cha Adam Davar Al Tegamdi Mitom Ela Amr Lo Miyad. When someone asks you something in learning, you shouldn't have to be, I'm not sure, in Hem and Ha. You should be able to respond to him immediately, to have incredible fluency. see in Divrei Torah. Now Tosaf here quotes the Gemara Bava Metzia that says that it's Surmir Rabbanu Mishani B'Diburi B'Mesechta, that one of the things you're allowed to lie about is your learning. If someone asks you, did you learn this, you're allowed to say no. You're allowed to say that you didn't learn it, even if you did learn it. So so it says Tosos, it's not a stira to what we're saying over here. I mean, over here we're saying when someone asks you learning, you got to just be like a lion right away, just answer him and tell him. So isn't that against that Gemara? Tosos says it's not against that Gemara at all. Over there, someone just wants to, he wants to know whether he should idolize you or not. So he wants to know, did you finish all the Shas? Did you learn? So you could say, nah, I didn't finish all the Shas, even if you did. So that you're allowed to lie about, because there's no Toelis. He just wants to know if he should give you an ego or not, or if he's trying to build up your ego for you. So that you don't need to do. That you could be more humble about. When someone has a Shaila in Halacha, so you shouldn't say, oh, I don't know. If you know the answer to the Shaila, and the guy needs to know what to do, so you gotta answer him. You have to be able to respond to him in learning. So Shneemar, Pasuk says, Emel Chachma Falsiyat. I'm going to quote a whole bunch of psukim that relate to a close relationship one should have with his learning. So a person should say to Chachma Achalsiyat, V'omer Kashram Al Esbo Secha Kashram Aluach Libecha. You should tie them on your fingers and write it on the Luach Libecha. You should write the Torah on your heart. It should be engraved on your heart. That's what we pointed out. The Beis Halevi in his drasha says that the Torah Shebichsav has a klaf and a ksav. Torah Shebal Peh does also, right? The Torah Shebal Peh is considered chakuk aluach libecha, that the guf Yisrael, or Shachta develops this idea in Eretz Tzvi, that the guf HaYisrael, the Jewish body, is considered to be the klaf of the Sefer Torah, which is the Torah Shebal Peh. And Rav Shachta says that's why when a non-Jew dies, there's no halacha, there's no chiv of kvura. When a Jew dies, there's a chiv of kvura. Just like when you finish using a lulav and esrog, tashmishe mitzvah, there's no chiv of kvura, there's no chiv of gniza. You could throw it in the garbage as long as you do it in a respectful way. But when the Sefer Torah gets worn out, it needs to be buried. The idea is that tashmishe mitzvah, things that are just used for a mitzvah, so they don't need to be buried. Things that are used for Torah, that are actual ksav shel Torah, those things need to be buried. So the guf of a non-Jew, so it's used for mitzvahs. He does shav mitzvahs b'nei Noach, but it's not a klaf for Torah. The guf of Yisrael is klaf of Torah, so that's considered like tashmishe kedusha, and therefore will require kvura. So Rav Shachta writes in Eretz Tzvi, "Va'omer kechitzim b'yad gibor came to the end of Urim," that like the arrows in the hands of a mighty warrior, so too is the bnei Urim, the young years when we're able to learn Torah well. "Va'omer chatzig gibor shnunim, va'omer chetzcha shnunim amim tachtachi yiplu, va'omer ashrei agever asher malias hashpasa mehem lo yavoshu ki yadabro sevim b'shar." Fight, so the enemies will speak against us in the gates. Maya Saivim Bashar, what's it talking about in the gates? What does it refer to with enemies at a gate? Even if you have a father and a son, a Rebbe and a Talmud who love each other and are so close to each other, when they're sitting and learning together, they become like enemies. They start screaming at each other, you're smart as krum, this is wrong, that's and each one gets very passionate and argues. But by the time they close the Gemaras, they love each other. It creates a bond that can't be created in any other way. That at the end of the day, it's going to create a very loving relationship when people get to learn together and they get to argue in learning together. Rav Shachta always tells the story of the non-Jew who happened to have been stuck on the train that took the Mir Yeshiva to Shanghai, and he wrote memoirs of his experience. And in his memoirs, he wrote that it was the strangest thing. All these young men would take out these gigantic books, and they would open up these books, and as soon as they would open up these books, they hated each other. They would scream at each other and fight and yell, and it got really ugly. And then they would close the books, and they were best friends again. They would close these giant books, and they were best friends again. So he noted exactly what the Gemara says, right? That Esvei Besufa, that when it comes to when it comes to learning, you got to learn with a fire and to argue and fight it all out. But at the end of the day, after that's all said and done, it's going to lead to a closer relationship to Ahava. Tan Rabban v'samtam samtam nimshal Torah kesam chayim, that the Torah is like a sam of life. It's a potion for living. It's like someone who hit his son and wounded him, and then he puts a bandage on the wound. And he tells him, "Listen, as long as this bandage is on the wound, you can eat whatever you want, you can drink whatever you want, you can bathe in hot water, cold water, whatever you want. Ve'enatam misari, and you have nothing to fear. Ve'matam avira, harei malanomi. But watch out, if you remove the bandage, then it could get infected, it could be very problematic. Kach Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu says the same thing to Klal Yisrael. B'ni, barasi yetzer hara, barasi lo Torah tavlin. I've created yetzer hara, and I've created a Torah as a tavlin. Someone told me, Rabbi Yechiel Weberman, who I learned the daf with now, told me that in the name of his Rebbe, Rabbi Zweig from Miami, that Torah is tavlin. What does tavlin normally mean? Spices, something that gives flavor to something. So yes, he's Kodesh Baruch Hu created yetzer hara, similar to what we said, Chanoch Lanar al Pidarko, that it's not about taking the yetzer hara and totally destroying him. It's about taking the yetzer hara and understanding where your yetzer hara is and channeling that in the proper way and bringing out the positive flavor that the yetzer hara. You're supposed to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu both with the yetzer tov, b'shnei yetzrecha, with the yetzer tov and with the yetzer hara. So that's the tavlin element of it. And if you learn Torah, you're not going to be given over in the hands of the yetzer hara. Shemar alom tetev se'es. That's what pasuk says. Tetev se'es when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Kain. And if you don't learn Torah, you're going to be given over in the hands of the Yetzer Hara. Shnemar lepesachatos rovets, that sin crouches at the door. V'lo odel shakol masom matanubach. Not only that, the Yetzer Hara's whole business is with you. He's trying to get you to sin. Shnemar veilechot shukaso. V'matarotza atamoshalbo. But if you want, you can rule over him. Shnemar v'atatim shalbo. Tan rabbanon kashi Yetzer Hara shafilu yotzer korora. Yetzer Hara is so bad, even the one who created it calls it bad. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls it bad. Normally, you know, there's an expression, a face only a mother can love. Why? Because the mother will always love, right? The one who created it will always have a sense of love. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Yetzer Hara, still calls it bad. Shnemar ki Yetzer Leif Adam Ra Minu Urav. Amar Rav Yitzchak Yitzro Shal Adam Eschadish Lav B'chol Yom. The Yetzer Hara of a person comes at him anew every day. Shnemar Rak Ra Kol Hayom, which is an extra words in the pasuk. Kol Hayom tells you, comes at you new every day. Amar Rav Shimon Levi Yitzro Shal Adam Eschadish Lav B'chol Yom Vakei Shamiso. The Yetzer Hara comes at you every day, tries to kill you. Shnemar Tzofa Rosh Al Tzadik Vakei Shamiso. Vil Malik Kodesh Baruch Hu Ozro En Yachol. If not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, we wouldn't be able to defeat it. Shnemar Elokim Lo Yazenu B'yado. If this manuval attacks you, bring him to the base of Medrash. If he's a stone, he'll melt away, and if he's barzel, if he's iron, he'll shatter. It sounds backwards, right? And it sounds like the iron should melt and the stone should shatter. How do we know that if he's a stone, he'll be disintegrated? Because Torah is compared to water, and water dripping on a stone ultimately wipes away the stone. How do I know that a father has a chiv to marry his son off to a woman? That you should get married, have children, and find spouses for your children. So Bishlam of Benobiyado. So I understand how you can find a spouse for your son. You can go find a woman and bring her home for your son. Alabito biyadohi. But is it really within your control to find someone for your daughter? So I'm not sure what the havamina is, why it's easier to find, why we assume that it's easier to find someone for your son. It happens to be the reality, at least in our times, that people tend to have much greater trouble finding shidduchim for their daughters. But I'm not sure what the havamina is, that it should be more difficult. But anyway, it says the Gemara, Hachi kamaluhu, nitin la midi v'livshia v'nechasya kiyechi dekaftu ala inchi. You should give her enough to dress her up nicely and to make her look nice so that people will want to marry her. So that's what you can do to help your daughter get married. Just a couple more lines. Lalando umnis, you have to teach your child the profession. Minalan, amrchiske damakra reichai mimisha shara hafta. Im isha mamashi, if the Torah is referring to an isha literally, so the limud is, kashem shachai vasi uisha, kachai lalando umnis. Just like you need to marry him off, so too you need to teach him a profession. Im tori, kashem shachai lalando torah, kachai lalando umnis. And if it's a reference to Torah, so just like you have to teach him Torah, you have to teach him umnis. The isha mafla shita benar, some say you have to teach him to swim as well. My time, why do you have to teach him to swim? Because that's the only way to teach him survival tactics. You need to teach him the ability to survive in different settings.